music, news, entertainment. It's all right here. This is the Kelly Alexander Show.
Hi, it's Kelly, and we look forward to our conversation with author and digital media specialist Robin Flynn, talking about her book called Chasing Rainbows, Reflections on Infertility and Motherhood. Robin talks to us about the incredible journey that she and her husband had to go on to finally welcome their beautiful daughter, Peyton. We then chat with our music editor, Sharon Hyland, about the announcement that recently rocked the planet, Kate Middleton undergoing treatment for cancer, and how that has impacted on society in a digital age.
Listen anytime, anyplace, just a click away. KellyAlexanderShow.com.
We're looking forward to speaking to our next guest, author Robin Flynn, who has written a new poetry book about infertility and motherhood called Chasing Rainbows, Reflections on Infertility and Motherhood. Robin, welcome to the Kelly Alexander Show.
Hey, Kelly. Thanks for having me.
Super happy to have you. And in full disclosure, you and I have known each other for many years. Colleagues, in fact, we both work at the same radio station, or like two of them, it seems.
Yeah,
like.
Exactly.
There's a lot going on. I've been a big fan of you for a long time. And when I saw that you were doing this book and this new endeavor, I was like, I really have to have Robin on my show because I want to spread the word as much as I can possibly do so that people know about this amazing project that you undertook. So can you, I guess, let us know a little bit about your journey with infertility and towards motherhood? Because I know, like, because you and I are friends, like, I saw at the station when we were working together, like, that, you know, it was a long process.
Yeah, my husband and I, David, we started trying for a baby before we got married, and it didn't come naturally to us. You know, we were doing all the things that you're supposed to do, and it just wasn't happening. So after about a year is when we went to see doctors to figure out what was going on, and we were both diagnosed with infertility. So I have PCOS, polycystic ovarian syndrome, and my husband also has fertility challenges. So that made it clear that IVF was going to be our only option, in vitro fertilization. And at the time, IVF wasn't covered in Quebec. So we had to start saving. So in the interim, we were trying some other things that were covered, like IUI, medicated cycles. But our doctor was very upfront, and he was like, the odds of this working are very slim with your current diagnosis, but, you know, it's worth a shot. And we began, you know, stowing away our pennies, because IVF is very expensive if you don't have coverage. So when we eventually had the money, we did, you know, start doing IVF. And ultimately, we did manage to have our beautiful baby girl, but it took over 3 years to get pregnant. And the emotional toll that that took on us, the toll it took on our relationship, it was really hard. Every time one of my friends or family members got pregnant, I wasn't able to be happy for them, which is horrible because, you know, when your sister's having a baby, you should be thrilled that you're about to have a niece or nephew. And it always just felt like a personal attack. And I knew rationally that it wasn't. But it's not a rational time. And it is very, very painful. Like, going through infertility is something that I think a lot of couples don't talk about publicly. It's very quiet and hush hush. And that's hard because you can't find support because you don't know anyone else going through it. So I was very open about it from the beginning, you know, always sharing updates on social media. I found it easier that way because then people weren't constantly asking, you know, when are you guys going to have a baby? When are you guys going to have? They already knew we were on it. We're on the case, guys.
Yeah. Can you talk a little bit too? Because I think this is a topic that not a lot of people would talk about with regards to their husbands. Like, how important was it for your husband to have a child and then to know also that, like, he himself has infertility issues? Because so often, I think, whether it's meant to or not, the perception, I think, in the world is that, oh, it's the woman's problem. Like, she didn't get pregnant.
Yeah, it was really hard when we saw my husband's diagnosis because, you know, it's true. We do often assume, like, it's her, you know, whose problem was it? And I think it's kind of emasculating for some men. They assume that everything's fine. And a lot of the time, it's nothing you can do. You know, they'll tell guys, like, to improve your sperm quality, you should stop drinking and smoking. My husband doesn't drink or smoke already. So it was like, he couldn't do anything to change the situation. It was really hard for him. And I also had to have a discussion with him because we'd already been so public about our journey, about how much he was comfortable sharing. You know, it's one thing for me to share what's going on with me, but how much of your own medical diagnosis are you comfortable sharing? And we kind of agreed that let's be an open book on this because it could probably help a lot of other people going through similar situations. And we both heard from tons of people that didn't want to talk about it publicly, but who were able to message us and ask questions and just feel heard, which was nice because they knew we were going through the exact same thing.
Now, when you talked about earlier, like the challenges on your relationship, like, is it that you started blaming each other? You got fed up with the process? Like, I suppose it was like a mixed bag of all of that.
Yeah, it's, you know, trying for a baby in theory sounds fun. But it stops being fun when you're constantly, you know, checking your basal body temperature and, you know, peeing on sticks to find out if you're ovulating, and everything becomes scheduled and clinical, and there's nothing fun or romantic or spontaneous about that. And it's very easy to get resentful of other couples, for one, because they get to do it the fun, good old fashioned way, but also of each other. You know, if you're not in the mood or, you know, had an argument that day, well, too bad. You have to put it aside and do what you have to do. And if you don't, then that's a whole nother month lost. You know, how much medication did we take? That's a complete lost cycle. You know, it's very frustrating. I got so used to seeing negative pregnancy tests. Like, I started buying them in bulk because I was going through them so often that when I did eventually get a positive, I didn't even notice. Like, it was just so routine for me to, you know, do the test, see the negative and move on with my life, that it wasn't until the next day when I got a positive that was very clear that I went and looked back at yesterday's test and it was also positive. My brain just didn't register it because I was just so used to seeing one line. I couldn't fathom that there could possibly be two on that test.
Wow. Joining us on the Kelly Alexander Show is author Robin Flynn. You can follow her on all the social media platforms at Robin Lisa Flynn. Robin, can you talk about the decision? Like, when did you start actually thinking about writing a book about this journey towards motherhood? Like, was it when you were in it or when you'd already had Peyton?
So it was, I've always been somebody who like journals and writes things down. So I'd been constantly keeping notes throughout the process because I wanted to have something, if we eventually did get pregnant, to leave to my child so she could see what that process was like. So I had been jotting down how I was feeling constantly. And when we did eventually have Peyton and I was on maternity leave and had a little bit more time, I kind of went through everything. And what emerged to me was a book of poems. Like, I had little lines and snippets that I took out and I was like, okay, what do I do with this? And it's such an emotional process. And I feel like poetry is such a wonderful way of encapsulating emotions. And I didn't have the bandwidth to sit and write, you know, a tell-all story about what happened. Maybe that'll come down the line. But I found it was just easier for me to write out those poems about how each step felt. And having the notes from when we were going through it made it a lot easier to take myself back to that time. Because, you know, it's very easy once your baby is born to almost like forget about what you went through and how hard it was. And like the actual IVF process, well, when you get to that, that's like injections that you're giving yourself in your stomach several times a day. Like, my belly was just covered in bruises. I was super hormonal and uncomfortable and miserable. And you kind of forget about it because it's like a 2-week process and then you move on from it. But those 2 weeks were some of the most challenging 2 weeks I've ever had because you're still going to work every day. You still have to clean your house. You still have to, you know, get an oil change. Like, everything goes on. Life continues. And that for me was the hardest part. The world didn't stop just because of what I was going through.
Because when you wrote the poems, you weren't that far out of the experience in a way. Was it triggering in a way to go back because you weren't so, even though you had a happy ending, quote unquote, because you had Peyton?
Yeah, it was very triggering because, you know, when I talk about IVF now and I say, you know, we spent almost $20,000 to get pregnant, people say, well, it was obviously still worth it because you got your daughter. Of course, but in the moment, you don't know that it's going to end in a child. You could be spending all this money and still not get pregnant. So it's very, very scary when you're in that situation. And thinking back on it and how scary it was in that situation, not knowing what was normal, how overwhelmed I was by all of the medications and the appointments and the ultrasounds and you know, it's very violating to you because you're going for pelvic ultrasounds every second day. You know, that's a lot of people in your business. That's that's difficult to deal with. And you have to just keep telling yourself, like, I'm doing it for a reason. I'm doing it for a reason to get through it. But, you know, I was also going through it during COVID. So my husband wasn't allowed to come with me to any of the appointments. So it was a very isolating experience. Like, even when I was pregnant, he couldn't come to the ultrasounds. Like, they just weren't allowed. So I definitely had a very unique experience for anyone who had a child during that period where it was very isolating. I was so scared that something would go wrong and I would be alone, that I wouldn't have someone to support me in that moment. Thankfully, everything was fine. But, you know, can you imagine something going wrong and you don't have your partner to fall back on, that you have to just deal with it by yourself and drive yourself home? Like, that, I feel for the women who had to experience something like that during COVID. That must have been, I don't know how you come back from that.
Did you have to have the baby by yourself, or was he allowed in?
He was allowed in. We had a doula also, and the rule was you were only allowed one support person because of COVID rules. Mm-hmm. So our doula originally was going to have to join us by Zoom, which is not ideal. You want them in the room to be able to, like, physically help you. And thankfully, I filed a lot of complaints with the hospital, and they changed the rule like a week before I gave birth. So she was allowed there. But there were periods of time where, like, if your partner tested positive for COVID, he wasn't allowed in the room with you. You know, if you tested positive for COVID, your partner couldn't come in. I know women who tested positive and then their baby was taken away. They couldn't have their baby in the room with them after they were born. Like, it was such a traumatic time to have a child that I don't think I've even begun to process what I went through. Like, I wore a mask when I was in labor. That it's really hard to practice deep breathing when you've got a mask on. And, you know, I did it because I was protecting everybody around me and myself, but it was just a very strange time. And it is triggering. Like, even when I just go back and read some of the poems that I wrote, it makes me emotional to go back to that time and remember what it was like. But it also kind of makes me, like, really proud of myself that, like, wow, I was able to do that and get through that.
How has motherhood actually changed your life? Like, what does it mean to now know you have your daughter with you and she made it and you're like a happy family of three right now?
Yeah, people always say, like, you don't know love till you have a child. And I always kind of resented that statement. Like, I was like, that's so dumb. Like, love is love, you know? But it is this all-consuming love where somebody else's needs are entirely ahead of yours, you know? And that's a really interesting feeling, you know, to, like, have somebody that you would literally risk your life for without even giving it a second thought. It's just, like, obvious. And she is just hilarious. Like, she's the sweetest. Everything about motherhood has been amazing for me. And, you know, I had a conversation not that long ago with a friend who also went through infertility. And she said, I think it's because we had a lot of time to establish that this was what we wanted. You know, sometimes if you weren't planning to get pregnant or you got pregnant right away when you started trying, you don't have as much time to prepare to have those important conversations. My husband and I are 100% on the same page because we had over 3 years to talk about parenting strategies, styles, nursery decor, names. Like, everything was ready. I already had a baby registry. When I was pregnant, it was like registry was done. Pinterest board was created with the nursery. Like, we were ready. And I do think that that helped a lot because going into it prepared,
yeah,
makes it a lot easier.
Yeah. Can you talk a little bit about that? Because I know that, you know, and I think maybe it's like, you know, I think with anything, like, people can take stuff for granted. Like, even, you know, what you and I do for a living, like, you know, working in media, I think some people take being behind the microphone for granted until it's not there anymore. Mm-hmm. And then you're like, oh no, you know? And so I think for parents that, you know, easily had a child and maybe they're on their third, like, it gets overwhelming, and they might complain about it. But what do you want to say to people about, like, not taking it for granted?
Yeah, like, I would never tell another mom who's having a hard time and not sleeping through the night and whose baby has colic, like, enjoy it while it lasts. Like, that's not helpful at all. But also, there are so many things that would be said off the cuff, innocently, that were not helpful to us. You know, if, you know, I was saying how much I wanted a baby and somebody would go like, oh, you can have mine. Like, that's not helpful. Like, it almost felt mean, like they were dangling their children in front of me, you know? And it would always be like, you don't even appreciate this thing that you have that I so desperately want. And I know they don't mean anything by it. There's no malice. They obviously love their children. I think people are just uncomfortable and they don't know what to say in those situations. But I found myself like, even when my daughter wasn't sleeping through the night, I didn't mind getting up with her, you know, like it felt so amazing because it was like, this is what I wanted so much. And honestly, the fact that she was born during the pandemic, that initial postpartum period was a lot easier for me because I wasn't expected to like cart her all over the place and show her off to people. It was understood that like we were just going to stay home. That was what was safest for the baby. So we really had those first few weeks as a family of three to just, you know, bond just the three of us. We didn't have to show her off. Anyone that did come to visit, like immediate family, all had masks. Like it was a very intimate experience. But yeah, I think it's so easy to take having kids for granted. But then when you think about the possibility of not being able to have them, not having your child in your life, like that's, I can't even think about it anymore. I can't imagine my life without her. Mm-hmm. Like I feel like she was the missing puzzle piece for me.
I think it's actually interesting what you've said too, just for people to realize, like, you know, we're using your example, but yeah, in anything, like it's so easy to take XYZ for granted in your life. So it's always good, I think, to have like a check-in, probably daily, if not at least weekly, to realize what you're thankful and grateful for, because you know, there's other people that don't have it.
David and I, my husband, we actually do that every single night before bed. We talk about something cute or funny or whatever that Peyton did. So like, you know, last night, for example, we were having steak and I cut off a few pieces for her and she just grabbed her fork and reached over and jabbed it in the whole giant piece of steak. Like that's what she wanted. I was like just eating it caveman style off her fork, which is hilarious. You know, so like every night before bed, we just like recap some of her best moments of the day. And I think that's great because even if she's had a rough day, is going through, you know, sleep regression or tantrums, whatever, before you go to bed, you remember the good stuff. I do think that that's a nice way to go to sleep and wake up and start fresh.
Something I've never asked you, and because of the journey that you went through to get Peyton, is there a special meaning behind you choosing Peyton?
Yeah, so it's kind of silly. My sisters and I are obsessed with the show One Tree Hill.
Okay.
It was a show that was big in the early 2000s, the early aughts. So when I met my husband, when we first started dating, I was like, by the way, go on IMDb and look at the cast and our children's names will be from that list. Like we are naming our kids after something from One Tree Hill. So like my sister's kids are also One Tree Hill names. So it's kind of, it's like a family thing. So if it was a girl, she was going to be either Peyton or Brooke. Like that was decided. So we ended up landing on Peyton. We just thought it sounded nicer. But okay. Yeah, if we had more children, they'll be from the One Tree Hill catalog.
That's amazing. And what's your sister? Like, does she have more than one at this point?
I have two sisters and they both have One Tree Hill kids.
Can you tell us the names?
Yeah, Lucas and Haley.
Nice. Good job. Okay, that's awesome. So I wanted to ask you too, like, what has been the reception of the book, like people now knowing that it's possible to read? And I think you were mentioning to me off air that, you know, there's many books that are out there, but what's been the reception for yours?
It's been overwhelmingly positive. So I was really fortunate that, well, I don't know, fortunate. I had a few videos go viral on TikTok when we were struggling to conceive. And because of that, I've built up this kind of niche or community of women within the infertility community. So there's not a lot of resources. You'd be surprised. Like there's a lot of like books on like diets you should try to get pregnant, but there's not a lot of like firsthand experiences. I don't know if that's because it's so traumatic that once you have your baby, you just want to forget about it and move on. People don't write a book about it, but there's not a lot of resources out there. So it's been really popular with women either going through infertility or who have been through it. And then even, you know, my labor experience, like I was in labor for 43 hours and ultimately delivered via emergency C-section, which was not the plan.
Yeah.
You know, so, you know, even if you didn't go through infertility, if you had a C-section or if you just have a child, you know, anything, you became a mom. I think it's relatable for anyone with kids, really. You know, there's stuff about my relationship with my husband in there. I think that relatability is what has made it quite so popular. Like the sales on Amazon have been really good. And I was a little surprised, you know, I haven't even started like aggressively promoting it yet. And I'm really happy to see that people are relating to it.
Amazing. And so how do people go find it? Is it only on Amazon at this point, or?
It's on Amazon. It's on, I believe it's on Goodreads as well. If you want to go check it out, if you're based in the US, you have Goodreads access. So it should be there as well. So you just look up Chasing Rainbows and it'll come up. It's $10 on Amazon. So it's super affordable. It hasn't officially released yet. You can buy it to pre-order now. And once the book comes out, then you'll get a copy right away, priority style, because you pre-ordered it. So yeah. And then I'm going to be doing some events in the Montreal area. So you follow me on social media and you'll find out where those events are. And then you can maybe get your copy signed if you're interested.
Awesome. And I did want to ask too, just for anybody out there that might be a budding like author, how hard was it for you to like do this publishing thing? Like, did you self-publish? Like, I don't know how that works.
Yeah, so I went through a publisher. I used Bookleaf Publishing. The process is, I think what I found was that it's just slow. You know, working in live radio, the urgency of things is kind of, you know, ingrained in us. So I'm used to things moving at a much quicker pace. And obviously, this is much slower. So that was frustrating for me. But that's just a me problem. Like, it took from beginning to not quite the end, because it's not out yet, but it's been about 5-6 months. And I found that slow for me. The book itself took years to write, right? But the publishing process, I do find it kind of cumbersome going back and forth with the publisher and, you know, agreeing on a cover for the book, like all those little things is kind of annoying. I just want the work out there now. Like, this, yeah, this is my little baby. I've put it out for the world to see. And I hope people get something from it. Like, I hope you can relate to it. And I hope it helps you with your journey.
And what do you want to say to people listening right now who, again, might be in the same situation you were a couple of years ago or a few years ago at this point? Yeah, just because, you know, like, you literally know what it feels like.
I see you. I know it can feel very, very lonely and isolating. And even in your relationship, your partner doesn't get it. I know that, like, my husband felt helpless because he wasn't the one doing the injections. He wasn't the one who had to do an egg retrieval surgery. Like, he didn't have to do any of that stuff, but talk to each other. You know, my husband did tons of research on ways that he could support me through the process. We made him part of the process. Sometimes he gave me the injections so that we could do it together and feel like we were in it together. When we actually did our embryo transfer, even though he wasn't allowed in the room, he was sitting in the car in the parking lot. You know, like, I knew he was there, that he was supporting me. So figure out a way to support one another through it and find a person to talk to that is not your partner. Because sometimes your partner is going to drive you crazy and you need to have somebody to vent to who's not going to say, here, take one of my kids. Like, somebody who has either been through it or is just like a safe person that isn't going to judge you, that you can talk to. Like, when we started IVF, my best friend made a care package for me and she dropped off this basket of, you know, like, ice packs for me to numb my belly before giving shots and green tea to relax at night and Band-Aids and, you know, my favorite snacks and Gatorade, like, just tons of stuff that she thought would be helpful during the process. And that, like, meant the world to me. She didn't know how she could be there for me. And that was how she chose to show up. And, like, that's the kind of stuff I'll never forget. So, you know, finding your people and surrounding yourself with the right people, I think, is really important.
That is awesome. I love that story. And before I let you go, will you continue to publish more books? Like, cause like, now you're an author, Robin Flynn.
Oh my goodness. I'm an author. I really love this poetry medium. Like, I found it a really great way to express how I was feeling without getting too bogged down in all of the words, you know? So I would love to write more, like, maybe as my daughter grows, you know, cause she's only two, there's still a lot of life to live. I'm sure I'll have some hilarious stories that I can share from her childhood. So I would love to keep writing. I mean, I've always been somebody who journals and writes and, you know, the stories are endless.
Perfect. Well, that's awesome. Well, I'm super happy. I'm super happy that you have Peyton and, you know, anytime you're welcome back on the show. So thank you for doing this.
Oh, thanks for having me, Kelly. Appreciate it.
That is author Robin Flynn. Again, don't forget that you can grab her book, Chasing Rainbows, Reflections on Infertility and Motherhood, on Amazon. And you can follow her on all of her social media channels so that you can find out exactly what's going on at Robin Lisa Flynn. And that's RobynLisaFlynn.
Follow us on Instagram, Kelly Alexander Show.
Always excited to welcome back to the Kelly Alexander Show our music editor, Sharon Hyland. Hello, Sharon.
Oh, hi, Kel. How are you?
I am fantastic. Thank you for joining us. I know you were off on vacation for a couple of weeks.
That's true. I made my way back though, Kel, because I knew we had things to talk about.
Yeah. That's why you didn't go on permanent retirement. I appreciate it. Right.
Can't say you. I didn't think of it every single day, but
do you have any rain? Did you have any rain? No.
I can't describe it in a way that won't make people mad at me.
Okay.
Like it rained a couple of times for about 30 seconds.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, just long enough for it to smell like rain, which is lovely when the sun's out.
Yeah, exactly. Because you were in a part of Mexico. And it's funny because another friend of mine was also in Mexico around the same time as you. She was there for a month, though. And she said the entire time she was there, and I can't remember what part of Mexico, but it rained one time, she said.
So. Yeah, it's amazing. The Mexico delivers, man. The whole bang for your buck thing. You get the weather, you get the food, and you get the people. All check marks in the positive. It's fantastic.
Amazing.
As soon as the sun's up, it's hot. Like hot.
Right away.
Like, don't want to complain about the heat because, you know, your friends back home are dealing with a surprise spring snowstorm. So
there's that. Anyways, it's all good. So I wanted to talk to you about this. The news has been out for several days now, but I find that it's still reverberating right around the world, which is the announcement that Kate Middleton made about having to undergo cancer treatment. Mm-hmm. And there's many facets of this, why I wanted to bring this up on, you know, the Kelly Alexander Show. And I will start off with the actual, actually your thoughts, first of all, on Kate Middleton, because I'm a big fan. I've always been a big fan. Your thoughts on Kate Middleton.
I like her. I mean, I like what I've seen. I think the work that they do in the monarchy, the positive that comes out of that situation, the benevolence is strong. So I like what they do. What I don't like is the entitlement that like paparazzi and those sort of not necessarily journalistic beacons feel they have when it comes to news and information with regard to the royal family, period. Mm-hmm. Yet, you know, the whole business of it and how it seems that people are working together to make sure that certain headlines are present and other stories are not as present is a thing. And that's an agreement that's, you know, decades in the making with them. What I feel that she brings to the table as with most of the young people in the monarchy, I find that it's like a somehow relatable. I mean, she comes off as real. You can see that she's a young mom. And then when she made the announcement that, you know, what's been going on with her health wise, you can't help but think that they've had to have this conversation with their three small children and let them know that, you know, everything's going to be okay, because you have to let your kids know that everything's going to be okay, even if you don't know for sure. You know, they can't say what's going to happen for sure. And it's, I mean, interesting. None of our business, right? It's one of those things we've talked about, that this stuff isn't any of our business. And yet, like, we go back to the relationship of, you know, the monarchy with the media and the sharing of information and stuff like that. They make it so that we feel like it's our business, that we do have a right to know, and we don't. But then everybody has an opinion when this comfort level is found. And I think we talked about this on our show this morning, me and my co-host Jay on Shome, that how everybody's sort of feeling like, oh my goodness, what did I say? Well, you know, Kate was sort of not present or not visible. Everybody had a comment about what was going on with her, and not always positive, right? Mm-hmm. So I have a hard time with that stuff. So, like, because I will approach it as none of my business. And if they're going to give me information, if they're going to share a statement, you have to hear it. It's their lives and they've got to live them. But there's been some crazy statements made by journalists. And I put air quotes on that because I can't imagine that anybody that committed their studies and then their career to journalism is saying the stuff that these people have said, like crazy things. Mm-hmm. Well, and just why? Because the royal family is fodder? Like, I don't know. It's a weird path, because we want them to be real and relatable, and yet we also listen to the media that tells us the stupid stuff. It's weird. Yeah.
Well, it's interesting. There's so many levels of this, which is why I wanted to bring it to your attention, was because something that happened to me about a week, maybe 7 days before, 10 days before she announced this news, I was actually sitting at an appointment And I was, you know, I was waiting in the waiting room, and the receptionist, you know, knows that I work on the radio. And so for some reason, she then thought I would have special knowledge as to what is happening with Kate Middleton. Mm-hmm. And she was like beside herself with like, you know, queries and like, you know, just like concerns. She's like, I think something's wrong with her. Like, I think, you know, this, that, and the other thing. And I think she even might have mentioned something to the fact that she thought like, you know, that cheating story that went around that Prince William mm-hmm. was cheating. And I was like appalled because, like, you know, I've known this receptionist for several years and she seems like always a stable woman. Yeah. Right. But she was so like fraught with anxiety and like conspiracy theories about, you know, the royal family and Kate specifically, obviously. And I was like, wow, like, because, you know, over the weeks leading up to this announcement, it really had gotten to a fever pitch with all these crazy conspiracy theories as to what was going on. Like, Kate's not there. Is she not even alive? Is she like leaving William? Are they getting a divorce? Like, and I was sitting there going to myself, if your life is that sad that you have to be only focused on this ridiculousness, which is then being super whipped up into a frenzy by, you know, elements of the media. And I even hate using the word media because mm-hmm. we work in media, but I don't
think
what we do is that.
Nope.
You know, I have a conscience, I have integrity, I think, and you do as well. So it, yep. I don't even like lumping ourselves into that. So I'll call it the tabloid press, but it's just so crazy. And then I wanted your thoughts specifically on, because, you know, her message, which, by the way, I'd heard, and again, this is not confirmed, but I heard that it was her idea to mm-hmm. go via video rather than like a faceless press release where right. it might come across as more jarring.
Oh, sure.
And so also that she wrote it.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah, that it was her decision on how to deliver it.
What's interesting also is that as honest as that approach sounds, and we want to believe that that's true, mm-hmm. it didn't really take long at all for the suggestion that, well, that video wasn't true, it was AI.
Oh, jeevers.
Like, okay. Come on. Like, whatever it is, at the end of the day, she's got cancer.
Yep.
And she's got to deal with that, which is a big deal. So it's a great distraction for everybody else to talk about all the other insignificant details.
Yeah.
But this is her life on the line, and whatever level of royalness she has, mm-hmm. she's a human being with a husband and three children. So that's, I think that's the core of obviously what should be important. And yet, when the entitlement of anybody else gets in the way, then other things are important to them too. Like, and that they have a right to know. It's mm-hmm. none of our business.
Yeah. And some stats that I read today and pass it along to you is that when she announced the news, the amount of online visits to websites that deal with, like, reputable ones in the UK that deal with cancer and cancer support, specifically one that we were reading about, had nearly 100,000 visits.
Oh, wow.
In a 3-day span when her announcement came out. And then they even went further and said that when King Charles announced his cancer diagnosis, you know, several weeks or even months at this point back, it went up 50,000 hits a day. So obviously there's a real interest in, and like, I think, and because she had mentioned too that because, and again, I'm not sure if this was confirmed, but that Kate wanted to announce this because knowing that she has an effect on mm-hmm. an impact on people doing things and yep. being, and so, you know, this is a great way for people to be like, oh, maybe I should get checked for AYZ, you know. Z.
Exactly. And that's the positive to come out of using your celebrity for good. I mean, good for her for doing it. She's going through a tough time and it's not going to get easier, mm-hmm. you know, in the immediate future. Mm-hmm. Hopefully it will get easier a little bit down the line, but she's facing quite a challenge. But to have the wherewithal to sort of say, hey, we could do some good with this is smart. Because yeah. even like for Prince Charles to have, King Charles to have been honest with what he's going through, there's a lot of men his age that are ignorant in that regard that would be like, no, I'm fine. I don't have to go. Feel fine. And then it's too late, you know? Yeah. So it does show that people should get checked. And it's a positive reinforcement that, hey, well, if they're susceptible to this sort of human condition, then anybody is, you know?
Exactly. Your thoughts also on where the tabloid press will go now, because now she's fully asked for time. It's in her message, you know, mm-hmm. needing privacy and time, which they had done the first time around, which then led to crazy frenzy. But now with the C word attached, mm-hmm. do you think the tabloid press, specifically in the UK, which goes bananas for the royal family, do you think they will have a modicum of respect, or will they create, like, if we don't see her for 3 months or 4 months, like, do you think they'll just kind of toe the line, or they'll start creating?
Oh, no, I can't imagine. Yeah, I don't think they have that solid a relationship with the tabloid press that they'd be like, you know what, give us a minute. They'd be like, probably not. Yeah. So I think they'll be on guard as usual, waiting, yeah. waiting. And I don't think that the story about William's affair is going away at all.
You don't think? Oh, I was hoping that it would. Okay.
No way. They can't. Okay. Come on. That's entirely possible.
Yeah.
I mean, it's entirely possible. He grew up with that. He grew up seeing his father do it. So
yeah.
That's just accepted behavior within the family, within the royal family, but it's certainly something that makes headlines and will upset royal watchers and royal supporters.
Yeah.
You know, and then there's that weird subsect of be like, well, that's the way it is. You know, Kate wasn't nice to him or something. It's just such an oddly generated cesspool of, you know, what could be something positive, but mm-hmm. it's never just one simple thing. There's many sticks in the pot,
yeah,
and everybody trying to stir.
Yeah, it's appalling to me because they do have such an ability to reach people and be inspirational, which I think, you know, from what I've seen, like anytime Kate is out, she does a lot of stuff with kids and youth and, mm-hmm. you know, all that kind of stuff. And I just feel like she has such a reach and such a power. So that's what we hope she gets back to, because that's the important stuff. Their thing. And I laugh too when people are saying, well, you know, the monarchy needs to go. And I'm like, it's a $1 billion business for the UK. It's not going anywhere. So,
yeah,
no,
it is a business. And I think that's to know that is then, yeah. I think has to be the filter to make everything else a little bit clearer.
Yeah, you're right. Sharon Hyland, thank you.
Kel, thank you.
That is our music editor, Sharon Hyland. Don't forget to follow her on Instagram at the Sharon Hyland. And of course, listen to the podcast that we co-host together. And you can watch it also on youtube.com/Kelly Alexander Show. That is 90s Now and 90snow.com for all of our social media handles.
The Kelly Alexander Show.
Thank you so much for spending time with us on the program this week. And a big thank you to our guests, Sharon Hyland and Robin Flynn. My thanks, of course, to our awesome producer, Andrew Sabino, for producing the show. And don't forget that you can listen to us on all the major podcast platforms, Apple, Spotify, Google Play, and Stitcher Radio. And if you have a moment, we always appreciate when you can leave us a review. We'd also love for you to grab all of our social media handles. You can do that by hitting up our website, KellyAlexanderShow.com. Have an amazing week. You and I will chat soon.
The Kelly Alexander Show.